at 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Dallas-based AT&T will get a big piece of news about its future tomorrow. A federal judge is expected to decide whether it can buy Time Warner. The U.S. Justice Department sued to stop the merger last year. The federal agency argues the $85 billion deal will hurt consumers. The companies say they need to combine forces to compete with video streaming services like Netflix and Amazon. Reuters reporter Diane Bartz told the public radio show Texas Standard the outcome will be significant for media companies.
The big thing to remember is that AT&T owns DirecTV, which is the biggest pay TV company and has 20 million subscribers. Time Warner is a really valuable content company, so you're going to have a deal that marries the biggest pay TV company with super valuable content.
The ruling is expected tomorrow afternoon. And while President Trump turned his attention to North Korea today, diplomats in this hemisphere were dealing with the fallout from this weekend's G7 summit in Canada. A key sticking point between the president and his neighbors to the north and south is NAFTA. Trump wants to sunset the North American Free Trade Agreement and renegotiate. Canada and Mexico are scrambling to save it. That was a primary point of discussion on Think Today. The KERA program kicked off a week of broadcasts from NPR's headquarters in Washington, D.C., with a pair of high-profile guests, Republican Senator Ted Cruz and the Democrat taking him on this fall, Congressman Beto O'Rourke. And while they disagree on NAFTA, both candidates want to boost trade with Mexico. Cruz sees energy as a key.
Opening up those Mexican energy markets would produce thousands of high-paying jobs in Mexico. That's good for helping grow the Mexican middle class. But naturally, the place they'd turn for expertise to develop that oil and gas is Texas. It would produce thousands of high-paying jobs in Texas. That's a win-win. That's the sort of thing we ought to be pursuing. That being said, there are very much divided voices within the administration, and so I hope the voices advocating expanded trade prevail over the voices advocating restricting trade.
Cruz talked with Chris Boyd in a Senate office last week. Chris caught up with his Democratic opponent, O'Rourke, in a nearby park. He sees workers as the key trade issue.
We have room for improvement in elevating the U.S. worker and her competitiveness. And I think a great opening opportunity is elevating the pay and conditions for the Mexican worker. If you're making $45 a week and you live in Ciudad Juarez, I can tell you that is not sustainable. You will not be able to put food on the table, a roof over your kid's head, and put anything aside for the future. When people in Juarez and throughout Mexico can organize the way that we can in the United States for better working conditions and wages, we are going to see wages go up in Mexico, which puts the U.S. worker at a greater competitive advantage and ensures that we can compete for more of those factory jobs, more of those manufacturing jobs, more of those export jobs that we should rightly demand be created here in the U.S.
You can hear the full interviews with Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz when this episode of Think re-airs tonight at 9, or subscribe to the podcast at think.kera.org. And all week long, keep an eye on the hashtag ThinkInDC. The talk at the State House in Austin today centered around school safety. It's been more than 3 weeks since a shooter killed 10 people at Santa Fe High School southeast of Houston. Today, a state Senate panel sifted through some of Governor Greg Abbott's ideas to secure schools, including, as Texas Public Radio's Ryan Poppy reports, the impact of architecture on safety.
The Texas Senate Select Committee on Violence in Schools and School Security heard testimony exploring school building design. Christopher Huckabee, chair of the Texas Society of Architects School Safety Work Group, noted that since the Columbine school shooting in 1999, many schools in Texas moved administrative offices to the front of the building to better screen any visitors.
We can see people as they enter our school. We bring them into a lockdown vestibule. They have to scan through traditionally with, say, a driver's license or something like that.
But campus police chiefs explained that when a shooter is a student and knows all the school's entrances and exits, the best line of defense is a law enforcement officer on the scene who can directly confront that student.
That's Ryan Poppy of Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thousands of Southern Baptists are headed to Dallas this week for their annual meeting. Paige Patterson, once a giant of the church, won't be speaking. He announced Friday that he would no longer deliver the event's keynote sermon. That came after weeks of scandal about past statements he'd made about women. As KERA's Christopher Connolly reports, America's 46,000 Southern Baptist churches are now grappling with their own Me Too movement.
Patterson's troubles began in April when an old interview he gave was reposted on a Baptist blog. In it, he tells the story of a woman at his church who asked for help because her husband was abusing her.
I said, all right, what I want you to do is every evening I want you to get down by your bed just as he goes to sleep. Get down by the bed, and when you think he's just about asleep, you just pray and ask God to intervene.
Patterson says the next time he saw the woman, she had two black eyes.
And she said, I hope you're happy. And I said, yes, ma'am, I am. And I said, I'm sorry about that, but I'm very happy. And what she didn't know when we sat down in church that morning was that her husband had come in and was standing at the back, the first time he ever came.
Thousands of Southern Baptist women signed a letter calling for Patterson to resign as president of the Southwest Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth. Then allegations came out that Patterson told a woman who'd been raped not to go to the police. He was fired from the seminary on May 30th.
His fall from this high and mighty place in the last few weeks has been just a really stunning turn of events.
Karen C. researches American evangelicalism and gender at the University of Arizona. She says it's impossible to understate Patterson's power among Southern Baptists. A one-time president of the Southern Baptist Convention, he was a major architect of the denomination's rightward shift starting in the 70s.
Women's issues certainly were central to the conservative resurgence in the Southern Baptist Convention.
Southern Baptists have adopted a view of gender relations called complementarianism, a counter, in many ways, to feminism. It says God created men and women differently, and therefore they have different roles and obligations in the church and in the family.
Its focus is on the importance of women's submission to men's leadership and spiritual headship in both the home and the church.
And that means women can't fill top leadership positions in Southern Baptist churches. But proponents of complementarianism say God didn't assign women inferior status. And Jim Richards from the Southern Baptists of Texas Convention says it's absolutely not meant to excuse or give license to abuse.
Obviously, God's word would tell us to protect the innocent and would call for that woman to be rescued from whatever situation that she would be in that would be dangerous physically, emotionally, or otherwise.
Richards has signed on to a resolution affirming the value of women and calling on church leaders to do better by them. It'll be voted on at the annual meeting this week.
It is a teaching moment, and I do believe that that definitely Southern Baptist churches are going to be different because of what we are experiencing right now.
The convention's research arm has surveyed Protestant pastors about domestic violence. Scott McConnell from Lifeway Research says pastors across the board see their churches as safe havens for victims of domestic violence.
But when we ask that practical question of, do you have a plan in place if somebody says, I'm being abused, do you have a plan to actually help them? The answer is only half of churches have a plan in place.
McConnell's research also shows a lot of pastors don't often preach about these issues, and disapproval of divorce complicates the conversation. But he says things in the church have been changing, and there's more room now for those complicated conversations.
You know, those that are retirement age or close to it, they tend to see the church as a place where everything needs to be nice and neat. And I think the younger generations are very much wanting the church to address life in its messiness.
Now, in this Me Too moment, McConnell says many millennials expect churches to take on previously taboo issues like violence against women. Christopher Connolly, KERA News.
Partly cloudy skies in store for us later tonight. Should be a low around 78 this evening. Tomorrow, sunny with high near 96. At 6:30, this is KERA News.